So this happened all the way back in the late 1990s when I was a college sophomore. Me and the girl I was dating at the time had been going steady for about 8 months, and since she was my first real girlfriend, my mom was pretty keen to meet her. And what better time than the holidays to introduce her to the folks? During the week before Christmas, my mom's family traditionally held quite a large gathering up at my uncle's place over in Sandy, in my home state of Oregon. Pretty much all my extended family head out there year after year from all over the Portland area, and since they've gotten word that I was bringing my girlfriend, the hype to meet her was huge. I won't lie, I was kind of nervous that they'd embarrass me in front of her, but that anxiety was totally misplaced. She got along really well with all of them, and despite some playful humiliation when the cousin of mine told her the story of how I literally peed my pants at the Haunted Mansion ride when I was a kid, they were a credit to me. And when it came to driving her back home, she seemed to be more into me than ever. We'd agreed to drive back down to Eugene at like 7 p.m. so I wouldn't be too tired driving back. But since we had such a good time, we stayed way later than we had planned to, and didn't get on the road until about 10:30 p.m. that evening. In the hopes of making the journey a little faster, I ended up taking the OR-211 instead of just sticking to the I-5S for the whole drive. Annoyingly, this didn't quite actually make the journey any faster, but point being, the OR-211 was pretty much surrounded by farms or these huge swaths of dense pine forest. So as you can imagine, big stretches of it aren't lit very well at all, and for some parts of the drive, we were moving through complete darkness, saved only by our car's headlights. But honestly, I wasn't all worried about it. I was pretty good at reading a map, and once I was back on the I-5, a road I knew pretty well, I figured everything would be all good. So we're just cruising along, in high spirits, talking about how goofy some of my family were, but generally my girlfriend was singing their praises and telling how she couldn't wait to meet them again. It's right around then that we hit a section of the highway that descends down this big old hill, heading up to the bridge crossing over Deep Creek. There, the highway is sandwiched by some of the densest forests you've ever likely seen, and there is absolutely nothing lighting up the highway. It's the only thing we can see from the front seats of the cars, like maybe 20 or 30 feet that our headlights are illuminating, and pretty much nothing else. But like I said, we're in high spirits, completely unprepared for what was about to happen. Right as the highway was starting to level off, something darts across the front of us so fast and so suddenly that I barely miss smashing into it. I brake so hard that I almost gave the pair of us whiplash, then when we're stopped, both me and my girlfriend are in a complete frenzy of, "Oh God, did you see that? What was that?" There are plenty of deer in that area of Oregon, plenty of coyotes too, but the thing that ran out in front of us was way too big to be a coyote, and something about the way it moved gave me this gut feeling that it wasn't a deer either. The shape was just way too slender, almost like whatever was out there had moved on two legs, not four. Now next thing, I know how completely dumb this sounds in retrospect, but my curiosity just got the better of me and I decided I wanted to investigate. So again, this was also incredibly dumb. I turned the car like 90 degrees in the highway so I could point our headlights into the woods. Yes, this could have caused a horrible accident if another car had come along at the same time I was doing this, but I don't think I was thinking straight at the time. You see, as a kid growing up in the Pacific Northwest, I've heard a lot of stories about Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and I'd be lying if I said that they didn't capture my imagination. No, I'm not saying that I thought I'd caught a glimpse of Gigantopithecus or anything. I know the stories are mostly exactly that, just stories, but a part of me just wanted to be sure. So like I said, I turned the car 90 degrees, turned on the high beams, and stepped out of the driver's side and onto the highway. I stare off into the trees for a minute or two, but I don't see a thing. Nothing is moving out there, and the whole scene was as quiet as the grave. But as I'm looking, I get this feeling in the pit of my stomach, and start to feel as if though I've made a huge error of judgment. It was one of the most intensely terrifying feelings I'd ever felt in my entire life, a feeling like I was being watched by something predatory. I know it's a huge cliche, and the whole I felt like I was being watched thing is such a tired old trope, but I don't really know any other way to phrase it. My heart was pounding. The hairs on the back of my neck are standing on end, and my gut just turned to ice. So without turning my back to the woods, where I expected the danger to come from, I started edging back towards the car. Then suddenly, out of nowhere, I practically jump out of my skin when I hear the car's horn letting off one long, excruciatingly loud, extended blast. I mean, it scared me so bad that I almost straight up peed my pants, Haunted Mansion style. My first thought was that my girlfriend had ended up leaning on the horn as she climbed over into the driver's seat for some reason, because she'd done that once or twice before. But as I turn back around, I can see she's still on the passenger side, but that she's actually leaning over to push the horn in what was evidently a frenzied attempt to get my attention. I run back to the car and ask her if she's okay, but she doesn't say a single word to me. She just points off to a spot about 50 feet away from where we parked. I spin my head around to see what she's pointing at, and that's when I see it. What was, without a shadow of a doubt, the thing that had run in front of our car just a few minutes prior. Lit up by the residual light of our high beams, what I saw was really obviously a man. But he was covered in animal furs. Would look like a mishmash of deer skins, bear skins, and elk skins, and on his head, secured in a way I'm not even sure of, were these antlers. At the time, because of how closely it was to the holidays, I remember the words reindeer man just flashed into my mind, maybe in the naive hope that the dude was dressed that way out of some misdirected festive spirit. But he certainly didn't seem in any kind of festive spirit, not in the least bit. Like, I couldn't see his eyes because of the weird kind of head covering he had on, but I could see his mouth, and at first he kind of looked like he was giving us a smile. Only as I looked, I could see it wasn't a smile at all. This guy was just baring his teeth to us, like the way chimps do as some kind of warning. After that, he turned and walked off into the forest, never to be seen again. Obviously, right after that, me and my girlfriend just got out of there and got back onto the roads towards the I-5. It took us both a while to calm our nerves, but my girlfriend was particularly shaken up, and that's because she'd seen something that I hadn't. And as we drove on, she explained exactly what that was. While I'd been staring off into the woods looking for Sasquatch or whatever, she'd noticed him out of her peripheral vision, but was basically frozen in fear for a moment or two as she watched him walking slowly towards me. Or rather, walking isn't the right word. From how she described it, this guy was stalking, the way a hunter might stalk a deer. The way she puts it, she had to summon up pretty much all of her courage to be able to lean over and honk the horn the way she did. Then when Reindeer Man had heard the honking, he'd backed off a little before I saw him, and like I said, he kind of just froze in place before disappearing. I did a fair amount of online research when I got home to try and find out if anyone else had any run-ins with this guy, but there was absolutely nothing online about him. There are plenty of crazy survivalist types up here in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm guessing he was one of those, but they tend to be pretty open about their existence, sometimes even advertise themselves as militiamen or whatever, whereas the reindeer man seemed like he was living completely off the grid. I don't live in Oregon anymore. Me and my girlfriend during the encounter broke up at the end of college, but when we were still together and I happened to be driving down towards Eugene, I always avoided the stretch of highway that I saw the reindeer man on. I've told this story a lot over the years, and some people honestly just think I'm making it up as like a campfire tale or something. But it's not a tale. It's not made up. And it's definitely not just intended to be some dumb spoopy story. It's most definitely a warning to anyone traveling on that road at night, because if my girlfriend wasn't with me when he ran out in front of the car, if she wasn't there to spot him before he crept up on me, only to scare him off with a blast of the horn, I honestly might not be here to warn you guys. So please, this holiday season, drive careful, drive slow, and do not stop for any reason on dark, deserted stretches of forest highway. During college Christmas break of 2016, I had traveled all the way back to Pennsylvania from California to spend the holidays with my parents. It was kind of weird going from being a mostly independent college kid in a place that hardly ever gets cold, to going back to living in my childhood bedroom in a state that becomes a legit winter wonderland around December and January. But I love my mom and dad, and I don't care how much the flight costs, there was no way I was going to spend the holidays alone in Cali. So anyway, my old room is on the second floor of the house, directly above the sliding door that heads out onto the decking in our backyard. It's a really heavy door, so anytime someone opens or closes it, it rumbles right up into my bedroom. This was in a house that was built back in the 50s too, so as you can imagine, the whole place has a lot of creaks and groans to it, but is otherwise pretty sturdy. I should also add at this point that part of the town that my parents live at is pretty safe, with a relatively low crime rate, especially to that of nearby Philly. The most intrusive calls they ever got tended to be from magazine salespeople and the odd Jehovah's Witnesses, and after my dad insists on debating scripture with them, they stopped calling altogether. Point being, they never had anything remotely close to any kind of break-in or home invasion for the entire time they were living in that property. Next thing is a brief confession from myself here. I picked up a pretty horrible smoking habit during my freshman year of college, so whenever my parents went to bed, I tended to stay up late playing Civ on my laptop, sitting next to my open bedroom window while I smoked and drank tumblers of scotch that I'd pilfered from my dad's liquor cabinet. After midnight, I'd have my window open from anything of 30 minutes to 2 hours. I mean, it would purely depend on how cold it was outside or how tired I was, but I generally let the room air out before spraying some air freshener so that the tobacco smell didn't cling to anything too bad. I also had to use headphones to watch TV and listen to music so it wouldn't wake my mom and dad up. But I tend to only ever use one earphone so I could keep an ear out for anyone coming down the hallway, since they really wouldn't be happy if they found I was smoking in the house. So one night, I was in my usual routine of conquering the known world in an online multiplayer game of Civ when our house alarm suddenly starts blaring. I don't think I'd heard that thing since I was about 6 or 7 years old, and I had completely forgotten about how loud it was, so hearing it had me practically filling my underwear from being frightened out of my skin. Point being, everyone in the house is now wide awake and ready to head off whatever is about to go down. Now my priorities might sound way, way off here, but initially my big worry wasn't so much that something bad might be happening, like a home invasion or something like that. It was more like me being terrified that my parents were about to realize I'd been smoking and stealing booze from them. I was 20 years old at the time, technically underage, and my parents were old-fashioned types, real sticklers for the rules. If they found out what I'd been doing, there'd be drama, and lots of it. But somehow, when my dad stuck his head around my door all bleary-eyed to make sure he knew where I was, he didn't seem to smell anything. I don't know whether this was because he was too tired and freaked out about the alarms to notice, or that he noticed and actually just didn't care, but either way, he told me to go into their bedroom and stay with my mom until he could give us the all clear. So my dad goes downstairs, I'm assuming with pistol in hand, and gets to work clearing the house, as well as checking the front and back yards to make sure that there's no one hiding in the darker areas out there. He comes back up, tells me and my mom he couldn't find anything and it was probably just a false alarm, and then we all head back to bed. Or rather, they went back to bed. I just went back to being a diplomatic genius on Civ 6. About an hour goes by and I start getting pretty tired, so I get up to close my bedroom window before heading to bed when the alarm goes off again. Once again, my dad goes downstairs, does a sweep of the ground floor and the yards, then comes back to tell me not to worry and that he figured it was just the wind or something. I mean, it had been a pretty windy night, which honestly suited me because it meant the breeze aired my room out. Like I said, it was an old house, so it wasn't out of the question that the wind could have rattled the doors or windows and set the alarm off. The point being that both me and my dad were chill about the alarm going off. Neither of us thought there was anything to worry about. So the next morning at breakfast, my dad is going through the alarm systems app on his iPhone, checking out some of the data readouts from the night before. All of a sudden, he's all like, "Okay, that's weird. Apparently the backsliding doors were open 14 times last night." Number one, I was impressed the alarm system was so sophisticated that it could feed him that kind of info. I guess he shelled out big boy cash for that thing. But number two, how could it have been opened that many times? Then I'm not kidding, like 5 to 10 minutes later, there's a knock at our front door, and it's the neighbor guy from the house down the street. He asks us if we had any intruders over the previous night, and we tell him no, or that at least we didn't think so. It's then that he tells us that he actually caught someone on a security camera trying to break into his house, that the dude had tried to jimmy a lock or something before looking right up into the camera before getting spooked and bailing. We assume that this is about the time that he moved on to our house, then kept at it when he realized it was the weaker target. That seriously freaked me out. The whole time I'd been sitting there, innocently playing games, sipping stolen scotch, there had been a guy trying to get into our house, maybe only 6 or 7 feet below me. If I'd have bothered to look out the window at any point and directly downward, I'd have locked eyes with the guy. He must have smelled my cigarette smoke, known someone was home, and it just didn't bother him in the least bit. He was more than prepared to face off with someone, although apparently not when he'd seen my dad with his pistol, sweeping the house in yards in the dark. I've always liked a scary story or a good horror film. Ghosts, vampires, werewolves, they're my jam. I've never found, like, serial killers or whatever to be that scary, though. Like, I didn't think that the human element to the horror was particularly potent. After that night, though, that all changed. It struck me how evil and predatory human beings can really be. How that guy had been creeping around in our backyard for basically hours right under my nose, and I'd had absolutely no clue he was there. It's how he managed to just disappear when the alarm went off, too, and how he had the balls to come back once we'd all gone back to bed. I mean, he was like a ghost or something, just vanishing into the darkness. I mean, think about it. My dad had checked out the backyard, tried to make sure that there was no one hanging around, hiding out in the dark spots underneath the trees, and there had been. There had been someone there, just watching my dad walking around in his slippers or whatever he had on, just waiting for him to call off the search before creeping back up towards the house. Just thinking about it now gives me shivers. And now that I'm back in Cali writing this, I always make sure that all the windows and doors in my dorm are locked, and that I double or triple check whenever I think something bad is about to go down or whatever. Because sometimes it seems you'll never know if someone is just lurking in the shadows until it's way, way too late. I've worked as a mall Santa for the past few Christmases now. I'm only 33, but thanks to my complete lack of exercise routine, I definitely have the figure for it. And once I have the beard and the wig and hat combo going, there's basically no telling the difference between me and a 60-year-old dude. Mall Santa work can be tough for a few different reasons. Number one, the hours are really long and the pay can be really terrible depending on which mall you manage to get employed by. Number two, the kids can be little monsters, and their parents can be just as terrible on occasion too. But the reason I'm actually considering skipping the entire thing this year and having something of a budget Christmas is that you get some seriously disturbing things happening from time to time. I mean, the kind of things that keep you up at night, even after a long, exhausting shift. However, the worst thing that's ever happened to me as a mall Santa was actually nothing to do with kids, parents, or terrible pay and hours, and I'm sure you'll see why after I tell the story. So every year, usually when the malls are quietest during weekday mornings, we get specially organized visits from special needs kids or adults with learning disabilities who are bussed in from the surrounding areas. Pretty much every other mall Santa I've spoken to about this agrees that it can be one of the most rewarding parts of the job, and that the adults with learning difficulties are often even more excited about the prospect of meeting Santa than some of the kids are. Literally, the only downside is that some of them are so heavy that my thighs hurt after having like 50 in a row sit on my lap, but other than that, it's honestly one of the best parts of the job. Last year, I'm in the middle of one of the special sessions when I get this girl coming up and sitting on my lap. I say girl, but she was legitimately a grown woman, looking like she was in her mid-30s or something, but she had the mental age of about 9 or 10, all smiles and giggles, way shy about meeting Santa again. It was cute as all get out, but the interaction was not so cute, and turned that way pretty fast. So like I said, she's all giggles and smiles as she comes up to sit on my lap, and I give her the usual spiel, asking her name, how old she is, if she's excited for Christmas and all that stuff. Then, when it comes to asking her what she wants me to bring her on Christmas Eve, she starts thinking about it, smiling at first before she suddenly gets super serious with a touch of sadness. I'm asking her if she's okay, what the problem is, and she's like shaking her head, acting like she doesn't want to tell me anything. I take the time in explaining that no matter what she asks for, I'll try my very, very best to bring it to her, no matter how big or small it is, that Santa always tries his best to bring good little girls and boys what they ask for on Christmas. She takes a moment, then the exchange goes a little something like this. You mean it, Santa? You can get me anything I want for Christmas?
Anything. Anything you want. Just tell me and I'll do my best.
Okay, well. And at this point she lowers her voice to a whisper and leans into my ear. I want my boyfriend to stop hitting me. Can you make that happen? I was sort of dumbstruck for a second. Like all of the things I thought she was going to ask, that would most definitely not have topped the list. I remember just nodding at first, trying to find the words, then being like,
I'll make that happen for you, sure, no problem.
She was so, so happy to hear that I'd fix it for her, and gave me the biggest hug I think I'd ever received while working as a mall Santa. I had to put on a huge smile, and of all the times I've had to fake being jolly and merry, that time with her was the hardest. But I just felt numb, like completely broken by what I'd heard, and I just tried my best to get through the rest of the session without bursting into tears. I remember all these thoughts rushing through my head, terrifying ideas of institutional abuse. She said boyfriend, and that made it extra creepy. Like, sure, it could have been just another guy in her care group or something, another adult with learning difficulties who she'd hooked up with somehow, but there was nothing to say that it wasn't a member of her care team that was, like, abusing her, in a completely different sense, too. Not just physically, but, well, you catch my drift. So when the session was over, I approached the member of the care team that had organized the trip and had accompanied them to the mall. I didn't let anything slip. I just told them how great I thought the session had gone and asked a few details about the group that had organized them. As it turned out, they were all from the same care home type thing, so I made a note of the name of the place as well as the name of the girl that was apparently being abused. That night, I couldn't sleep. I just kept picturing some evil monster abusing that poor girl, taking advantage of their position to put some poor special needs woman through torture, then telling her that she'd be killed if she ever breathed a word of it to anyone. And here's where stuff starts getting even more intense. Now, I could have just called 911 with the info I had at hand, registered a general complaint, and then heard nothing back about it. But a buddy of mine had a cousin with the local police department, and not just some gumshoe beat cop either. They were a detective. It took some convincing, but I convinced my buddy to pass along their cell phone number so I could get in touch with the dude personally. It took a little while, but I managed to get through to the guy. He sounded pretty skeptical at first and seemed kind of irritated that his cousin had even given me his number, but once I explained what the issue was, his tone changed completely. Now, I didn't find this out until way later from my friend, but his cousin had a special needs daughter who was probably going to have to either live with them for the rest of their life or was going to head into a group home at some point so she could have some measure of independence. So when I explained the situation with the special needs girl I met as a mall Santa, it obviously hit the guy right in the feels as the topic was so close to home. The detective tells me that he'll look into it, thanks me for letting him know. I get him to promise to tell me if anything comes of it, and he says yes, and we hang up. And that was the last I heard of it for like a month. Then, after maybe 5 or 6 weeks, I'd almost forgotten about the whole thing. Christmas was over, the mall Santa job was way behind me, and I was back to working my regular hours as a self-employed mechanic. Then I get a call from a number that seems vaguely familiar, although I wasn't quite sure why. Turns out it was my buddy's detective cousin, who reminded me of the tip that I'd given him about the care company. Of course I remembered, but by that time I really didn't think anything would come of it, but oh, how wrong I was. The detective thanks me for the information, and although he told me he couldn't say too much, he told me to keep an eye out on local media outlets. The next thing I know, it's all over the local papers that there's been a misconduct scandal involving a local care company. I picked up a copy and read the story, only to find out that it's the very same one I had reported. The long and short of it is that the cops had uncovered endemic levels of abuse in the company, stuff that varied from financial discrepancies to straight-up physical abuse, and sickeningly enough, there was even cases of care workers taking advantage of mentally disabled females in ways that were seriously inappropriate. There were numerous arrests, with some of the sleazier and violent criminals looking like they were going to get years in prison for how long they so cruelly taken advantage of some of the most vulnerable people in society. It made me sick to my stomach to read about how some people could bring themselves to do something like that, but it was stopped. And I felt incredible that I'd actually managed to be a part of the chain of events that brought the whole thing crashing down. I just hoped that that poor girl, who was obviously pretty traumatized by what was happening to her, and just not being able to understand why it was happening either, found some measure of peace after it. And in a way, Santa did kind of bring her exactly what she wanted, even if it wasn't on Christmas Day, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is a thought that never fails to make me tear up.